5, episode 2 of the All Things Sports podcast. Welcome back. My name is Matthew Gordon. I am the host of this podcast, and I'm here with one of my favorite guests that we're going to have so far. He's a former NBA All-Star, All-Defensive Team. Should have been Defensive Player of the Year in my mind, but we'll talk about that. And his name is Roy Hibbert. How are we today, Roy?
I'm good. Appreciate you having me. Ready for some good dialogue and pick your brain, pick my brain. Let's have some fun.
100%. That's what it's all about. So before we dive into, you know, what's going on in the basketball world today, for those listening in, they probably know who you are, but how about you give us a nice description of, you know, who you are, what you did, and who you are today?
Well, like you said, my name is Roy Hibbert. I went to Georgetown, graduated in 2008, degree in government, went off to play in the NBA, played for 9 seasons. If I had played one extra season, my family would get a healthcare for the rest of their life. So I'm really kicking myself that I wasn't able to complete the mission at least, you know. But then it took some time, was a former coach for the 76ers. Now I'm embracing my broadcaster role and everything like that for CBS, and we'll see what happens.
Love to hear it. So let's talk about college before we jump into your NBA career. So Georgetown, tell me about that experience. And I was wondering about like the selection process. What schools were you in between? Where was like the warm interest for you, and how did you end up at Georgetown?
So I'm not normal. I went into high school at 13. Most people go in at 14. So I was 13, like 6'10", and everything like that. So I was getting recruited from a bunch of different schools. The school I really wanted to go to was UNC. You know, the Tar Heel Blue, everything like that was something I really wanted. And I think it was Matt Doherty was a coach, and he got fired, and they brought Royal Williams in from Kansas. So that was like my sophomore year. And then, but long story short, my high school coach, his name was Dwayne Bryant. He went to Georgetown. He played at Georgetown from 86 to 90. He was the Dikembe Mutombo and Alonzo Mourning's point guard. So he used to tell me, I went to school in Maryland. I'm long-winded. I'm getting to the point. But sophomore year in high school, I used to go up to Georgetown to go play pickup. My high school coach would, you know, encourage me to, instead of playing against the local high school town, go, you know, get your butt kicked by, you know, Ruben Boomche, Mike Sweetney. So I went up to Georgetown a lot. Michael Jordan was on his way back to playing for the Wizards, so he would go up to Georgetown to go play pickup. So I'd be there, see him bring Randy Moss. So I felt that Georgetown was a community. It was close to home. They had a long lineage of big men. So I actually committed to Georgetown my sophomore year in high school, and I rode the wave since then.
Nice. And your teammate, Jeff Green, I just wanted to talk about that. Maybe about your relationship with him. Two guys from Maryland. He's a Maryland guy, I believe, also. Was it like kind of like representing Maryland, playing at Georgetown? Was it like a little full circle? Or?
I mean, Jeff was way more talented than I was when we first got to Georgetown, but it was nice. We would cross paths from time to time. Definitely a talented, athletic, skilled player. We play on the same AAU type of circuit. We play together sometimes on a team, but a real good guy, hard worker, you know, basically showed myself the way of how to be a pro in the whole process, because we came in together in 04. He left for the draft in 07. And I went in 08. So was definitely picking his brain about how things go in the league. But definitely a good guy, has longevity. I think he was on the Houston Rockets this past year. So at his age, he'd be contributing, and you know, at his levels, kudos to him.
Yeah, the IQ is also off the charts from what I'm seeing. And speaking of NBA talent in your college years, the upset lost in tournaments to Steph Curry and Davidson. You know, that was before we all saw he was in superstar, top 10 player of all time. What was it like in your eyes to kind of see that Cinderella run? And did you have any, I guess, like any feelings that he might just be the next big thing? Or was it just like, we just lost to a Cinderella team?
Well, it was definitely tough. I actually got asked that in the interview today about that experience. But I didn't know he was going to be what he is today, which is kudos to him, his hard work, you know, his lineage in terms of shooting and the pedigree of knowing how to be a pro and doing things the right way. You never hear about anything with Steph in the media, bad or anything, always the good stuff. So, but I know when guys make runs in a tournament, they're going to get drafted. You know, whether they're, you know, a shorter player, if you have a good run, you're going to get a look. But
Right.
I thought he was going to get drafted. I didn't think he would be who he is. So kudos to him. I said this on numerous occasions. I was asked to do an interview for his documentary. Someone reached out to me about it, and I said, hell no, I'm not trying to relive that. I had never seen so many grown men cry in that locker room after that loss, though, man. It was definitely tough. It was definitely tough.
No, for sure. I just had to ask it just because that was, I mean, he's like one of the best players of all time, in my opinion. So, cool to hear that perspective. So let's jump right into the NBA. NBA draft process. What was it like? We see the combine, we see, you know, we hear at least about the pre-draft interviews from somebody that's been through that process. What are we not seeing that you experienced that happened to you? Something that we may find to be interesting, intriguing. I would just love to hear maybe something that stuck out to you throughout the process.
Well, I'm always interested to hear about the combine because something happened where I didn't either sign with my agent yet or but the process to go to get invited to the combine, I wasn't a part of the combine. And that was probably one of the most difficult things because I wasn't most of the time the guys who are in the lottery picks, like top five, top six picks, they don't do the combine. But my letter got lost in the mail or something happened. So I wasn't able to go do like the 185 bench press tests. I wasn't able to do the sprints test. Like so all the stuff that they do, they spend all day, they have the cameras on you and everything. So one thing that I tell guys all the time, there's a player, Neil Quinn, who I actually called some games for the A-10. You know, he's a good player and everything. He's going through the draft process and I told him, I literally had like nine workouts in a row. I'd fly from Sacramento to Houston to Seattle at the time to the Clippers to the Lakers. You know, I don't think I worked out for those two teams, but I'm just giving it. You know, so every day I was on a plane going to a new city to do the workout. And I'm getting to the point, but since I didn't go to the combine, every team that I went to didn't have any stats on me. So I'd have to. So if the workouts, I remember having to do a workout with Russell Westbrook, in Seattle, and like two other, Joe Alexander, I think, who went to West Virginia, and literally like the workout started at 10. I'd have to get there at like 8:30, and I would do the 185 bench press. I would do the sprints. So literally that'd be a Monday. Get done with the workout, fly to say Sacramento. And then the next day, they don't have that info. So I have to do the 185 bench press again. So by day three, I can't even get more than like two reps
Oh
and
my
everything like
God.
that. And in my mind, I'm just like, you know, like, is this going to bring my draft stock down that like a center, you know, can't even do 185 on the bench press more than three times? But yeah, that was something that people don't see. It's grueling, that process right there, going through the draft. Mentally and fatigue and physically fatiguing.
I mean, I'm exhausted thinking about that, and that's quite insane, just to be completely honest with you. But I think it worked out for you because you were drafted 17th overall. The Raptors drafted you, and I'm pretty sure they traded your rights to the Indiana Pacers. And was that was the Jermaine O'Neal trade?
So interesting thing there. My agent, David Falk, legendary agent who represented Michael and his and the other agent in his office, Danielle Cantor, basically had me in the office in DC. They called Larry Bird. I had a great workout against JaVale McGee, a future NBA champion, DeAndre Jordan, another future NBA champion, Alex Ajinka, and then also in myself. So all four of us worked out, had a great workout. Indiana, I remember my agent calling Larry Bird. And Larry said, if Roy's there at 17, we're drafting him. And this is a week before the draft. So in my mind, I'm just like, you know, God damn, like it's basically said, I heard this is Larry Legend, you know, from French Lick, you know, is on the phone telling my agent, Roy's there at 17, we're picking him. And I said, so at least I knew I couldn't go lower than 17. But he told my agent, make sure you don't try to get him drafted ahead of 17 and everything like that. But it was a grueling process. It was nice to know ahead of time that the Pacers were going to trade for me. I knew the significance of that. It was Jermaine O'Neal is like the big guy for Indiana, and then you're basically trading an icon for, a rookie to be his replacement. And then long story short, the Pacers bring in Miles Turner to be my replacement. And I'm hoping that he, kicks some ass so we can beat New York. I know you're a New York guy over there, but I'm hoping that Miles Turner can, shut these guys down, Brunson and Hart and DiVincenzo down at the rim, So it comes all circular. I don't know if I said that right, but it comes full circle.
And we're definitely going to talk about the series going on right now. But I just want to talk about your career for a second. So, pretty successful career as a defensive stud. I mean, you were in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. You had a couple. You had a all defensive second team under your belt. People love the fact that you were one of the best shot blockers in the league. Most specifically, it's ironic that we're talking about Knicks and Pacers. That Melo block, I'm sure you've been asked about a lot. Obviously, sparked the team into going on like a 9-0 run, I'm pretty sure, end of the series. What kind of was, if that is your moment, that's fine. But I'm kind of wondering, is there a moment of your career that you were like, damn, like that is something I'm never going to forget? Whether it was like in the locker room, on the court, whatever it may be, throughout your time in the NBA.
So I will say this though, like the big moment, like the Melo block and stuff like that is obviously burned into my memory, a lot of fans' memories, and everything like that for the Indiana Pacers. I walk around New York, CBS Studios. My broadcasting job is in New York. I walk the studio whenever it's my call time. And the amount of people stop me on the street and say, "God damn it, that block on Melo and everything like that was, set our franchise back like 10 years." But you guys are here now. But I'm gonna answer your question. So that's the culmination right there. That's the top. That's what you work for. But for me, I like the small details, the things that people probably may not understand. And hopefully, your audience will, allow me to elaborate. But for me, I like the working on the details to get better. And that's one thing I do miss. My first 2 years in the league, Frank Vogel, who unfortunately just got fired from the Phoenix Suns, he was number three on the list of assistants under Jim O'Brien, then Larry, I mean Lester Connor, then Frank Vogel. So during the summer, my first or second year, I had averaged like the most fouls per game. For fouls per minute. So literally, I get in the game, pick up two quick fouls, and my coaches were telling me, "Roy, when you're on the court, our numbers go up. So we got to figure, like Frank is telling me, we got to figure out a way to keep you on the court." So that summer, those 2 summers right there, we worked on verticality at the rim, being able to get contact, because there used to be a guy like Jameer Nelson for the Magic who would dribble, get into my body a little bit, and then just get a foul. I'm just like, how can I defend the rim if it's not a clean block? So doing drills over and over and over, I have to get three, four stops in a row where I'm in a 3-on-1 situation where, just like how the block was in with Melo, I'll do a drill where I'm guarding a big in the post. The wing has the ball and looking to throw it down to the person I'm guarding. I have to front and I have to cut off the baseline as he drives. The big will pop to the elbow. I have to close off the baseline and then go close out at the free throw line to get the shot. Swing, swing, then it's a 2-on-1 situation. So for me, I used to do that every day at the end of practice. I gotta get three stops in a row. So that type of situation where I'm guarding Tyson Chandler and then Melo drives baseline. I had done that drill so many times in practice in the summer that it became second nature. And I tell people to this day, like my body just, I didn't tell my body to go block Melo. It just naturally just went and did that. So yes, the Melo block is like the pinnacle. But for me, my favorite moment was just being in the gym, being in the lab, working on trying to figure out how to crack that code to be able to stay on the court and make an impact.
And it just sounds like the overarching like theme, I should say, is your IQ growing and developing in the league. And I think When you're in the league and you put so much time into it and you dreamed of being an NBA player and you start to see yourself grow, you start seeing that like your skills are growing, your IQ is growing. That's a fulfilling feeling, it seems like, the way you described it. So love that analysis. And that leads me right into the big topic of what's going on in the NBA world right now. The Indiana Pacers, Roy's former team, are currently down 0-2 to the New York Knicks. Big game tomorrow in Indiana. What do we think of the series so far? Because I'll be honest, the first game, the officiating could have been a little bit better. But now the Pacers are going home. They can easily win these two games at home with home court advantage. What's your breakdown so far of what you've seen these past two games?
So I'll say this. A, I'm an old timer who doesn't want to be yelling at the clouds, but like defense was like very big for me. And Indiana has built this team to be a running team. That gets out and plays fast, but you sacrifice, defense. And like I have to get over that fact, the way how I did things necessarily may not be the best way how things are done today, especially with how they constructed the team. So the defense at the rim basically, grinds my gears, but that's something that they're willing to give up. It's like the games could be 128 to like 117. For me, that's like astronomical. When I used to play, but for nowadays, that's like probably like a low scoring game. So for me, I feel that Indiana needs to win game three. And the biggest thing for me is the fact that the Knicks basically only play seven players, and Ogunobi just got he's out. So he had what 18 or 20? How much did he have off the bench? He may have had 20
Like
plus points.
27,
Yeah,
26.
27 off the bench, and like. That's big numbers, and everybody else on that bench, if you look at the box score, nobody else on that bench is scoring. So as well as they're playing now, as well as Brunson's playing, I have a feeling like they're going to get whittled down. So this game three is important. And yes, calls are something, but when I played, I always felt that we were the underdog and we weren't going to get calls exact same way that they Coach Carlisle feels now, but I'm not the coach that's sending in clips to the league and stuff like that. So I think it's imperative that we win game three. I have a feeling that got but if we stretch this out to a game seven, maybe Brunson, DiVincenzo, and those guys' legs may be a little bit tired, and maybe we can get one. I'm not sure.
Yes, I was going to ask your prediction. What do you think? You think it's Pacers in six, Pacers in seven?
So I'm gonna say this. I think that next year the Pacers can get out the East with a full summer with Pascal and the new everybody gelling. I'm hoping for Pacers in seven, but I'm just going to say that unfortunately I don't think it's going to be our year this year. But let them have a summer together. I think but I'm hoping for Pacers in, if that makes sense. If that makes
Yeah,
sense,
totally. Yeah, you're just being realistic and you're just, you're also, you want them to succeed, but you also want to like make sure nothing's rational. But they're also they traded for Siakam this year. Like you got to give them, just like you're saying, like give them an off season to kind of prepare and to play with each other a lot more. The chemistry may increase.
Like the Mavs. I know with Kyrie and Luka last year, they didn't play that much together, but they're slowly gelling. Yes, they're playing with OKC right now, and that's obviously going to be a tough up and coming team, but it takes time. You can't just be like a Boston Celtics team in what 07, throw a team together and then win a championship like that first year. So that's
Right,
very rare.
100%. And before I let you go, I do have one question for you. I ask this to every NBA player that comes on the podcast, just from somebody who played in the league too. Who is your GOAT? Who's your NBA GOAT? Greatest of all time?
So for me, MJ is the GOAT for me. Obviously, Space Jam, the shoes, the flying through the air, he's the GOAT. But I have to say, like, my favorite, it's kind of like an amalgamation, but it was always MJ was the top, but my favorite player was always Shaq and Tim Duncan. Shaq, because he was breaking backboards back in the day. He was in Shazam, he was in Steel, he had that charisma. But then also Tim Duncan, like, for the footwork and then just the mannerisms and just how he went about his business. And I actually got to spend some time with Tim Duncan, training with him 2 summers in a row. Learned a lot from him and everything. I always say, tell your audience, like, always pick the brains of people that have been there before you and have done things, you know? So it's okay to ask a ton of questions. And I was just a fly on the wall. I flew down to San Antonio and actually got to work out, got to meet Popovich and got to work out with Tim, go on the track with him. Whatever he did, I was doing. So that's long-winded. But I would say the GOAT, MJ, LeBron, Kobe, and then a lot of the older guys, Kareem and those guys.
Yeah.
Favorite players, Shaq. Kobe. No, I mean Shaq, Tim Duncan. So yeah.
Yeah, very respectable answer. And again, thank you so much for coming on. I really
Got you.
appreciate it. We'll be in touch. And I know you're flying to Indiana tomorrow. So best luck to your Pacers, man.
For sure, for sure, for sure. And thanks again for we were playing phone tag and it took a while to get this set up though. That's on me, man. But best of luck to you and thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Got you. You have a good one.
You too.